Heart Sutta, following their version. Then we will continue from the Theravada tradition. Okay. Yeah. Sister Lee. Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Teo. Today we try, hope that every one of us can join in the chanting for Heart Sutra, because we are closer to the sutra itself already, and it will benefit us a lot. Okay. Mindfully, we pay homage to Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo and Namo Guan Si Ying Pusa, and we will chant also one time Heart Sutra. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo, Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo, Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo, Namo Guan Si Ying Pusa, Namo Guan Si Ying Pusa, Namo Guan Si Ying Pusa. Po Ye Po Lo Mi Duo Sing Jing, Guan Zi Zai Pu Sa Xing Sen Po Ye Po Lo Mi Duo Si, Zao Jian Wu Yun Jie Kong Du Yi Qie Hu Er, Se Li Zi Se Bu Yi Kong Kong Bu Yi Se Se Ji Si Kong Kong Ji Si Se, Sou Xiang Xing Zi Jie Hu Lu Si,舍利子是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味触法，无眼界，乃至无意之界，无无明意，无无明净，乃至无老死意，无老死尽，无苦集灭道，无智以无得以无所得故，菩提萨多依般苦婆罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想究竟涅槃，三世诸佛依般苦婆罗蜜多故，得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提，故知般若婆罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，证实不虚，故说般若婆罗蜜多咒即所咒曰：揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
萨德萨德萨德。 OK, we will start the Theravada Puja. As usual, we pay homage to Sakyamuni Buddha three times. Then after that, we will chant the salutation. Okay, we pay respect three times. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami,Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami,Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata Viramani Sikapadang Samadhiyami. Adinadana Viramani Sikapadang Samadhiyami. กามิสุมิจจาราวิรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาวิรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจาปะมาทัฏานะวิรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสาธุสาธุสาธุโอเค pay homage to all the worthy ones Okay, just relax yourself, huh? Very good afternoon to all, then we can start. Okay, today we are at the Nine Heart Sutra. We have to go back to the notes. There are some short notes given. The Eight Heart Sutra, which we had on the 8th April 2012. We will go through a review of what we have actually done.Then after that, we continue. Okay, I will go through it faster this time because most of this we have dealt before except the part 3 meditation, which we did last week. I will spend a bit of time there. Okay, part 1. Short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta this class. Part 1 is a recap and emphasis on the previous lesson. So last week we were having this question. Somehow we got the condition to answer this. The question was, can you teach me how to meditate? This is a very, very, I think, common way of asking. Wherever you go, the first question they ask is, can you teach me how to meditate? And this is the most common question, but also the most common mistake, because it is a wrong question to ask. Even though we understand there is no right, no wrong, but in this particular case, it is wrong not because of right and wrong. It is wrong because in order to ask a question, you must find out what is it that you want.Before you can ask that question. That's why it's a wrong question. The question should be, what is meditation? After you have asked that question, then only you will know how to meditate. Then only what you ask has its meaning. Then you can ask, can you teach me how to develop the meditation or to meditate? Otherwise, it's a wrong question. Your purpose and intent is,to learn how to meditate. So isn't it appropriate for you to find out what is meditation before you ask further question? So that is the reason why I said, because it is a wrong question to ask. When you ask this question, you expect the teacher or instructor to give you a method and a technique to meditate, right? So this is the common mistake.And this sounds very logical, isn't it? But what is a method? This is where investigation can help you. If you inquire into all this, you will understand. It is only a series of instructions to do certain things, like training the mind to be mindful and heedful, so that it is in the moment, silent, peaceful and aware within. Or some people, they train your mind to develop concentration, using the 40 meditation object and all those things, etc. Some, they may even train you to just chant. And more often than not, the method or technique taught never defines the meditation. So isn't it more important to understand what is meditation? That's the reason. Only then do we know how to develop it. Not until you understand what is meditation, you cannot develop it. Otherwise, you become gullible. You just believe what people tell you. You ask for instruction to meditate. Then when they give you instruction, you thought, I follow this instruction, I am meditating. But you never investigate and find out for yourself what meditation is. So whatever that appears logical may not necessarily be the truth or right question to ask. Then there is a note. I read to you. Unless you understand what is meditation, you will not be able to develop it. This is obvious, isn't it? All methods and techniques given are just only an initial skillful means to help train the mind to be heedful or in concentration. They are only a series of instructions given to initially train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought or preoccupied with what it is thinking or feeling. So this point you must take note. The purpose of meditation is to train the mind to be heedful, then to use it to see things as they are, to develop the wisdom or the understanding, and to understand how the five mental hindrances can hinder your mind from returning to its original state of silent inner awareness and peace before it's stirring. So this is a very important understanding. Originally, your mind is already peaceful, calm, before you stir it. The stirring comes from your delusion, your ignorance, upon sense door consciousness. When you become conscious of what you see, what you hear, or what you think, if your mind is at peace, the mind will not stir. But because you don't have wisdom, you are deluded. You have this tendency to react or to stir your mind because you have emotion, you have wrong view. Your views and opinion are very self-centered. So all these contribute to the problem. So do not force the hindrance to go away, but instead develop the corresponding five spiritual faculty of mind, especially sati and samadhi, mindfulness and collectedness of mind, as taught by the Buddha, to arise the wisdom to counter them. That is the most important. For the Dhamma is beyond thought and beyond time. So heedfulness is without thought, hence without psychological time. When you are heedful, you are mindful. When you are mindful, there is no thinking. Understand that? Mindfulness is a constant awareness. When you are heedful, you are constantly aware. You don't think. Okay. After that, I just highlight another very important point about the five spiritual faculty. Brother Teo always advises us to diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculty. Or five mental faculty, which is Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. For these five spiritual faculties are the key to the development of the 37 factors of enlightenment. They appear twice within the 37 factors of enlightenment. So the Buddha has identified there are 37 factors that can make you enlightened. But there are only seven key factors of enlightenment. Under the Sattabhujanga, Seven Factors of Enlightenment Sutta, the Buddha stressed on seven. But the other are expansion related also an enlightenment factor, but they are not so critical. So the seven are sati, the first one. Mindfulness is the first factor of enlightenment. Without sati, you cannot start. Without mindfulness, you cannot start. So when you have sati, you can investigate into the Dhamma. You can use your mindfulness or awareness to investigate into all the teaching that the Buddha teach. That's why the second factor of enlightenment is called sati followed by Dhamma Vichaya. You use it to investigate Dhamma. Dhamma Vichaya, investigation of Dhamma, is the second factor of enlightenment. Then when you investigate into the Dhamma, since the teaching is so appropriate and beautiful, it stands up to investigation. It gave you so much confidence and faith in what the Buddha has taught you. So because of that, your sadha will be strengthened. Then it will move you to cultivate. So this will give rise to what they call virya. Virya is a spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity. And that is the third factor of enlightenment, virya. So when virya comes to be, your mind become composed, your mind become mindful. So when you can develop all this, your mind settle down, no more heedless, then it develop what they call piti. Piti is the fourth enlightenment factor, P-I-T-I. Piti is a spiritual joy, born of spiritual calmness. When your mind is trained, there is this piti, it will arise. Then if you continue to stabilize this piti, it will become very quiet and very still. Then pasati come to be. Pasati is tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. That is the fifth factor of enlightenment. After you have developed pasati, the Buddha said, if you continue to cultivate your daily mindfulness, stabilize it until it's very stable, then the silent mind can become what they call samadhi. Samadhi, or the unwavering mind, the collected mind, whenever you see a sense object, whether it is through seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, or thought consciousness, the mind is unwavering, collected, very calm and very stable. Such a state is called samadhi. So when there is samadhi, this is the sixth enlightenment factor. Then finally, sati and samadhi allow you to see things as they are, to develop the wisdom, the awakening. This will give rise to the last of the seven factors of enlightenment. The Buddha called it equanimity. Equanimity or upeka. So equanimity is the last factor of enlightenment, born of wisdom, born of understanding. So this is how the seven factors of enlightenment came to be. Okay, we move on. There is a very good question asked that day. Somebody asked, what about those who believe in chanting? Can chanting itself bring about enlightenment? Then I answer, yes, it can. The players start to have some problem ever since last Tuesday. I don't know what happened. Now I off the main switch, see how it goes. After a while, it tend to heat up or don't know what, then it stops. Never mind. We make do with what we can. Okay. The answer is yes, it can. Provided you know how to chant with very strong faith, clear mindfulness and understanding, then it can also bring about the cultivation of the five spiritual faculties of mind. Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya, leading to the enlightenment. So whatever method or technique or training that you use, if it can help you bring about the five spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, use it because it is relevant. Understand or not? Once a spiritual faculty is developed, you can understand the Buddha Dharma very quickly. And you look at the five spiritual faculty actually. Saddha is very important, the faith. Once you have the faith, the Virya and Sati come to be, followed by Samadhi. And these three are all enlightenment factor. Understand not? So Virya, Sati and Samadhi, they are enlightenment factor. Then finally, Panya is also enlightenment factor, because once you have wisdom, you have Upeka. So the spiritual faculty will make you enlightened too. So this is a very important point. So when you understand, then you will know chanting can bring about the very strong faith, because you can connect to the Buddha or the Bodhisattva. Then when your faith is very strong, it will motivate you to cultivate the mindfulness or the meditation. Then if you know how to chant according to what they teach you, when the chanting becomes very clear, full of mindfulness, it is like training your mind to be centered in a state of clear awareness, centered on the chanting. And because the chanting is actually the Buddha's name or the Bodhisattva's name, and they have this very powerful vow, it can bring about the condition for the affinity, for you to connect to the Buddha. No, it's okay. This one, the machine got some problem. Maybe somebody need to sit here off and on the back. It's okay. Don't worry. Okay. There is a switch at the side. No, when the red light go off, you on, off and on back. No, no, at the right hand side. Okay. Okay, thank you so much. We should thank Miss Lee for taking that job. Okay, I will read on. So don't be rigid or dogmatic to simply comment when you still cannot understand other people's practices or cultivation, especially those of the Mahayana or the Pure Land tradition. Their Buddhas and their great Bodhisattva vow can also be very powerful to help those who are sincere to connect to their vows, enabling them to develop their cultivation so much faster. Whatever you do in life, and if you know how to develop it with understanding, then it can bring about a transformation too. For life itself is the meditation. We are the cultivation of the daily mindfulness, which is the cultivation of Sati Sampajana. Sati Sampajana is daily mindfulness and clear comprehension, as taught by the Buddha under Kaya Nupassana. Then some important truth that Brahmacharya had learned from his teacher Prachayantra Amarabhikkhu, a very wise and famous Thai monk during the early years of his cultivation. During the year 1988 to 92, I came to know this very famous monk. I should thank Reverend Mahinda. He introduced this monk to me, together with Sister Sumitra. There was so much affinity. So after I came to know this monk, I really learned a lot from him. I learned through listening to him, that's all. The first thing I remember hearing from him was he said, "The mind is the mind, body is body. Body never the mind, and the mind never the body. But body important too. And both body and mind must harmonize to help us live life and develop the meditation. And we choose take care mind because mind is more important. Just from this, I only need certain truth about the mind, the form and the mind. So just from this, I was able to break through my pain. Because that time he was conducting the 8 precepts, I remember, in Brickfield. So I was sitting for quite long. Then as usual that day, the pain came back to me. Then I know how to endure all this pain. It was because of what he said. When I reflected on what he said, body is just a body, mind is mind, the mind never the body, body never the mind. Then I tell myself, like the Buddha underneath the Bodhi tree before he became enlightened, I say, even if my leg paralyzed, I cannot move also, I will sit through it to understand this truth, because I have faith in what he said. So you know what happened or not? Miraculously, something really happened that day. I just relax and I endure the pain. The only faith I have is what he told me. The body is the body. The mind is the mind. Because I remember what the Buddha said. If your body is sick, do not allow your mind to be sick. Then from there, I just relax. Then I just sat through. The pain developed until it's so sharp and so strong. Like the thought tell you, you better get out of it, otherwise you will paralyze, otherwise you will be in deep trouble. Then I remember, the Buddha said, and my teacher said, body is a body, mind is mind, mind never the body. Then I just silenced my mind, I said, I decide, not you, I tell the thought, I decide. So I decide to sit through. Then you know what happened? When I relax and sat through, all of a sudden, that very, very sharp pain flashes through. Zook, no sound, I only say it. Zook. Suddenly my mind bright, very, very bright. It's like a very bright light went through. And that very moment, very funny, that pain no more. All of the phenomena, the pain, no more. Then there was so much energy inside my mind, my heart. Then I asked myself, hey, this is it. How come like that? All of a sudden. Then I become so brave. There is so much clarity. There is so much joy. I start to look at that location of my leg where there was this severe pain before that. My mindfulness was so clear, like a magnification glass, like a microscope. I zoomed down there, and I saw all the phenomena down there. That pulling, everything is still down there. But no more pain. Then I felt my mind totally detached from the body and the phenomena. The phenomena is the phenomena. The mind is the mind. The two is separate. Then I start to understand the first jnana, nama rupa parichena jnana, able to discern between form and mind. Ah, that is the real one. Not the one that talk about there is a knowing mind that knows something. So they thought the first jnana is knowing that there is a mind, there is a form. The knowing mind knows the form. That is the first jnana. No. The real one is in your meditation, where you can see the separation between mind and the form. Totally, no relationship at all. But for normal human being, because your consciousness and mind is trapped inside, the aggregates are grasping aggregate. That's why whatever happened to your body, your mind or consciousness detect it, and it actually grabs onto it. That's why you call it pain, understand? When I had this very, very, what they call, intense experience that went through this, my mind became so clear. Then that time I can check every part of my body. There is so much clarity because the awareness, the mindfulness is there. then I can see how when I relax, the energy just flow through like anything. Then all this becomes so clear. That day onward, 1989, I think, I don't have any more problem with sitting with pain until today. No more problem. That very important flash to change the entire understanding completely. Then from that day onward, the Dhamma keep on arising. And so many things happen. Then the second thing he told me is this one. He said, we choose accept everything as natural because they are only form and mind, a mighty nature rolling by, not so real, and not what one thing. This was so profound, so very profound. And when I heard that, there was so much joy in my heart. Because he said, mighty nature rolling by. All this while I already knew is nature's law. But he put it so clearly. He said, we choose accept everything as natural. Understand? Means whatever happened to you in your life, do not react. Do not complain. Understand? Because it's something natural. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. Understand? It's the same. It follows nature's law. So when you understand this, it becomes so clear. And he explained, he said, because it's only form and mind, not what you think. Form and mind is not you. This physical form and physical mind, or mental mind, the consciousness, they are not you. They are the karmically conditioned out form and mind. This segmented life that you take, you manifest as, like this form and mind of my brother Theo, this is not me, understand or not? But this life, I come with this vehicle, this physical body, then karmically condition out this type of DNA and this type of consciousness. I use it to live life, to experience all of life, to understand whatever I want to understand. So these are my tools and vehicle for me to use when I come, this life, this segment. That's why the Buddha also called his earthly body 2,000 over years ago. He said, this is his Nimanakaya. You know what is Nimanakaya? Functional body. The body that performed the function of the Buddha. And it's not him, because it's only element. Then there is the spiritual body, the spiritual perfection that he has cultivated over the aeons and aeons of cultivation. He called it the Sambhogayakaya. So when Sambhogayakaya come back to his nature, they combine with his Nimanakaya, he become the Buddha, the Dhammakaya, understand? The third body of the Buddha. So now you understand, underneath the Bodhi tree, the night when he became enlightened, the mind was able to silence and connect to the nature. And through that connection, the spiritual body, the spiritual perfection came back to him because it was his inheritance. And when that thing merged in, everything became so different, so clear. There is so much clarity. That's why he became the Sammasambuddha. He speaks the Dhamma. So like this life, this form and mind, you call Brother Theo, is not me, understand that? My vehicle, my tool, my instrument, karmically conditioned out for me to use. The affinity that you all have with this nature, it will manifest accordingly. So when you understand this, you will understand why my teacher Acharyanara say, because only for my mind, a mighty nature rolling by, not so real, and not what you think. So this is a very profound statement. We choose accept everything as natural, because only for my mind. Understand not? He know you, he know me. Not me. When you argue with your wife, it's for my mind arguing with another for my mind, understand not? You are just a bundle of memory with his views and opinion of this life, understand? That's why when somebody get accident, the brain damage, they are not what they are anymore. Understand? They forgot who they are. So, who are they? They are just a bundle of memory with this conditioning. Understand? Not? Views and opinion. And from there, they use this form and mind without knowing who they are. They think through Sakaya Ditti. They are what this form and mind is. Because you give it a name, then they cling on to this. I am so and so. Then, Sakaya Ditti, self-delusion, manifests. Then you develop what? When you have Sakaya Ditti, you become what? You become a egoic mind, a personality. And this person, he thinks he is real. He will have selfishness, possessiveness. Understand? That's how you become problematic. So all this come about through wrong view, Sakaya Ditti. So when you have this selfishness, possessiveness, you will try to own. You will try to possess things. Then you try to become somebody or something. Understand? Because the ego is there, the personality is there. You think this is you. You think it's real. Then you worry about this body getting sick, getting old and die. Then you cling to all that the consciousness can manifest. The feeling that arise. Your emotion. Your ability to know things through perception, mental perception. Then your views and opinion that you arise through your thought process, your conditioning, everything. Then you have this mind or consciousness that upon contact with the sense basis of this body can give rise to consciousness. You can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. Then you say, oh, I am what I am. I am real. Because everything you come into contact is so solid and so real. Understand? That's why that delusion is very powerful. And the Buddha gave 5 analogies for you to understand it. He said your form is just like foam. You know what is foam? Huh? When you wash your clothes, huh? When you put in the bleaching powder or what? When you stir it, what happens? A lot of foam appear very solid, isn't it? But you leave it for a while, it's gone. Understand? So this physical elemental form, external form, is all the same. They are not what you think. Then feeling is like what? Feeling is like what? You haven't heard the 5 analogy or the 5 aggregate. Feeling is like a bubble. The Buddha said, pop, gone. Pop, gone. Every moment of feeling is just a consciousness. You aware. Yeah. It's like bubble. But because you cling on to it, you think it's real. You say, pain. That sensation become like very real. Yeah. Then third one is perception. The Buddha said perception is like a mirage, like in the desert. When you see water, that mirage, you go near, it's just a reflection in the sky. Understand? And perception is just a reflection in your mind, your consciousness. Nothing else. You perceive it through a mental consciousness inverted in front of your brain. And your brain can make it upright. That's how you come to understand. And through mindfulness, you can see this image in front. I saw it long, long time ago when my daily mindfulness was very good. I can just silence my mind and I can see moment to moment of this perception, how the mental image appear. So clear. Then third one is sankhara. The analogy is like a banana stem. The Buddha said, you cut a banana stem, layer by layer, you peel it off. What happened towards the end? At the core of it, the center of it, empty, nothing. So what is sankhara? Sankhara is your thinking, understand? Activity of mind, emotion. They come and they go, they come and they go. So at the core of it, it's empty. That's why the Buddha said, sabbe sankhara anicchang, sabbe sankhara anatta. Empty and non-self. So when you understand this, you understand. Then the last analogy is the most powerful, the Buddha said. Your consciousness, whatever that you become conscious of, is like a magician, the analogy. You know what is a magician? A magician is also called illusionist, isn't it? A person who creates illusion for you to see that. So how real is an illusion? That's why everything that you come to know is only your mental perception. That's why I say the world, the universe, is just a world of consciousness. And how real is consciousness? Just a mental image, anasana. And you grasp and cling onto it. You can cry and die for it. You can become so miserable because of it. So you ask yourself, isn't this stupidity? Isn't this delusion, ignorance? So all this will become very clear when you understand the Buddha Dharma, the teaching that the Buddha had shared with us. Yeah. Okay, the third one is very important. Huh? This is what we will deal with today also under the meditation. My teacher told me, Prajnayandra, no less than 6 to 7 times when I'm alone with him, he keep on reminding me. He said, we choose contemplate all dharmas until it is very, very clear. That time, I don't know what he meant, actually. I just follow what he told me. So I keep on reflecting on the Dhamma, on the teaching, everything that the Buddha said, and everything that he said, I keep on reflecting and contemplating. Then my understanding keep on coming, because I have the spiritual faculty of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. And he was the one that teach me how to do all this. Because he said the religious routine is very important. The puja that the Buddha taught is very important. But he never explained to me that it's to develop these 5 spiritual faculty. But I came to know later that it is because of these 5 spiritual faculty that I developed through following what he tell me. I was able to understand so many things. So this is the most important. You have to reflect and contemplate all Dhamma until it's very, very clear. So this shows the importance of the second turning wisdom, Cintamaya Panya. I only came to know later when I want to teach and share with people the 3 turnings of the 4 Noble Truths. When I got hold of the first Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta from Sister Yun Chan, then I realized, hey, what he has been teaching me is the second turning, which nobody knew. That's why when I read the sutta, I knew what that second turning is. Okay, we move on. The 4th one is equally profound. When he told me the highest meditation, at first I was thinking, oh, it must be something fantastic. But it's so simple. He just said, we choose aware all action, all movement in the present moment. Then when I heard that, immediately I connect. Oh, no wonder. Under the Kaya Nupassana, the Buddha mentioned the 4 foundations of mindfulness, Sati Sampajana. Precisely this was what he taught. Then I start to appreciate what the Buddha teach. Then I have faith in him, this teacher, because after I met him, my heart was so different. I can connect to him. I can feel his energy. It was so strong at that time. Then my faith in him was so strong. My affinity with him was so strong. And he gave me a lot of conditions, actually. There were numerous occasions. Every time when I am near him, he told me so many things. I attended a lot of his katina and his temple at Kanchanapuri, Sunataram. I went there 2-3 times. Every time I went there, a lot of things happened to me. Then he was very, very kind. He liked me so much. He let me stay at one of the kuti, just below his one, where his chief disciples stay. He put me there. I also don't know why, so I stayed there. Then he told me and the other friend, Uncle Ku, I visited him that time. He said, wait for him. Then after he finished all the talk, he took us up to his very high up in the mountain, the monastery. He talked to us even very late. That time was almost 1-2 a.m. He got so much loving kindness and compassion. I can feel him. That's why I have a lot of faith in him. And he was the monk that actually helped me so much. And through all this Dhamma, he just spoke. I just picked it up. Yeah. Then I understood. Then I actually cultivate on my own. Yeah. And this is the most beautiful, because the daily mindfulness, after he mentioned this, I stopped doing. Then I realized I was hardly even 5 minutes aware throughout the day. Then I tell myself, hey, this is it. I have yet to start the real meditation. That's why I release my concentration out. That time I was doing anapanasati, continuous mindfulness. I went into absorption. My mind was so still, so silent, so tranquil. And that time I was still in the university. I thought that's it. Yeah. But when I came out to work, I realized the moment I touch money, the mind inside can still move. There is still this greed to have money, to become successful and all those things. Then I realized, hey, this is what the Buddha said. Like a glass of water, before you stir it, if you let it settle down long enough, all the dust, all the whatever dirty particle, they will settle down. Then the water like clear. But actually, the dust are still down there. The anusaya, the latent tendency, all your defilement, they are still down there. So the moment there is condition for it to stir, they will float again. Then I realize, yeah, that must be it. The concentration or the samadhi, without the wisdom, it suppresses the defilement. It's like you are enlightened. You cannot get angry because the energy is so strong. You cannot be drawn to the sense, what they call distraction. Sense or consciousness, when they arrive, you cannot be pulled away because your tranquility, your calmness, your stillness is so strong. Yeah. But these are all conditioned state, not born of wisdom. That's why later I realize I release it out. Then I develop the daily mindfulness. I start to see my defilement, the real defilement, my subtle greed, subtle, what they call conceit, self-conceit, mana. Then I start to see all the very, very subtle aversion or dislike. Then the delusion behind, how sometimes it can also condition you into fear, worry, anxiety. And mainly the subtle selfishness which you cannot see under normal time and circumstances. Because the daily mindfulness was so powerful. I start to see everything before the mind stir or move. What happened? The mental intention behind, the very subtle one, you start to see them. That's why the Dhamma understanding becomes so different, so powerful. So the moment I release my mind to daily awareness, then I do the daily mindfulness. I follow his instruction. Within 2 weeks, my daily mindfulness came to me. I was full of joy. Then throughout the day, I start to be aware and mindful. And so fast. And from there, the clarity is there. And when the daily mindfulness come to be, the understanding keep on arising. The panya, the wisdom keep on arising. Then that time, the Buddha's teaching, every sentence, every verse becomes so clear. That's why you don't need to check with anything. The nature inside, understand and know. Okay, we move on. Then the fifth one is one I told you just now. Importance of having a good religious routine to train your mind, to cultivate and to meditate. That time he always tell me, he said, we must have a good religious routine. So every time, he said, when you wake up, you pay respect to the Buddha, mindful, aware. Then, if can, meditate for a while. Then after that, before you leave your house, pay respect and do the same. You go to temple, same. First thing, pay respect. Recite your salutation. Then after that, you got time, sit for a while. Then before you leave, pay respect again. the religious routine is very important, is it? So that it will develop your faith. Then I come to realize every time you fold your palm and pay respect mindfully, there is an energy that points towards your heart. That faith, the sadha and the virya with this energy actually open up your heart. That's why I realize after that I can feel his energy very strongly because I was doing this. Then later on, my heart start to open up very fast. When I do the daily mindfulness, I return my awareness to my heart. That's why that time my heart open up very fast. So all these are very important. Then the religious routine, you can adopt your own, whatever that suit you. Early morning, when you wake up, before you sleep, or whenever you are free in between. Even in the office. Last night in the office I meditate a lot. I go to office early. Then I shut my door on the aircon. Then I off the light. I meditate. 5 minutes before the office, I on the light again. Then I get ready. Then after that, lunchtime I meditate. After office I meditate. And you don't need to have an altar in your office. I only hang one calendar, and somehow this calendar always got this Kuan Yin or Amitabha. I always hang that type of calendar because they used to sell to me. You don't need all this actually. Any direction you can just sit, cross your leg. I used to cross my leg on my chair, because I got this. I was lucky. I got this executive chair. My whole leg can cross out there. Then I just radiate. Then I just meditate. Then when I pay respect, I fold my palm. Any direction, I just, because Buddha nature is everywhere, I just chant Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Then sometimes Kuan Yin. During the early years, 86 to 88 or 89, I actually that time very strong in Mahayana chanting Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and Amitabha Amitabha. Because the chanting tip came to me through Master Xuan Huasai and some of this tip. Then that chanting like automatic. Automatic. So that time I chant a lot. So the faith developed very strong. That's why I know the spiritual faculty are very important. So you have to do it. You have to do it. The last one is importance of cultivating the five spiritual faculty of mind and keeping the precept. He always said, you must keep your precept. You must have the spiritual faculty. So these are the things I learned. Now I share with you. Hope you all can benefit. Okay, the key to understanding meditation is that the body and mind must harmonize and be in a state of constant relaxed inner awareness to develop the meditation. And because the mind is trapped inside this physical body of ours, we are one's karmic conditioning. So whatever the body experiences, the mind will also experience them via its mental consciousness. This is the reason why the form and mind can experience suffering conditioned by one's karma if wisdom is not developed as yet. So now you understand, because it's karmically conditioned out, your mind trapped inside, your consciousness trapped inside your body. That's why you can feel whatever happened. This is how karma operates, understand? Otherwise it cannot make you miserable, understand? That's why through karma, it conditions a form and mind for you to experience all your good and bad. If you have your good karmic inheritance, then this form and mind will experience all the good things. That's why you will be like very blessed, very lucky. Actually nothing to do with luck. It's all your inheritance. Your life will be very meaningful, very beautiful. But if you are so heedless in your past, committed so much karmic negativity, when you come, whatever karmic, it will condition your form and mind to have a lot of suffering, misery. That's why human beings suffer a lot. Those who don't have the good karmic inheritance and the Dhamma, they suffer. Okay, we move on. To become truly enlightened, or to truly become enlightened, one have to understand. Sorry, one must have the understanding to transcend birth and death of this segmented life of ours. Means this form of mind, this segment of our life. The famous quote by Venerable Quang Ching, Master Quang Ching or Quang Ching Lao He Sang, Guo Qi Xing Bu Ke De, this one I have explained. The past is already gone, so not a reality anymore. Wei Lai Xing Bu Ke De, the future has yet to come, so it's also not a reality. And Xian Zai Xing Ye Bu Ke De, means the present moment also cannot be held on to, hence it's not a reality even. So that word reality I put in inverted comma. Though it is the highest in life or within existence, because the moment you know or experience it, it is no longer the moment. Understand or not? Because every moment life passes by. But the moment you recognize it as this moment is gone. Understand or not? So in order to transcend life or birth and death, Liao Shen Si, the Mandarin meaning is very deep. Shen Si is birth and death. Liao Shen Si means transcend birth and death. One must transcend even the present moment, which is still within existence or life itself. Although it's the highest, the present moment, awareness or consciousness. But you have to transcend this moment if you want to transcend life. That's why cessation of form and mind must come to be, otherwise no enlightenment. As we all know, the moment is only apparent reality in life. And as real as it can be, it is only within the moment, hence impermanent. And the very next moment, it is dead and gone, understand? And no more. And the next moment, arise and pass away again and again, understand? So, empty and not surreal or anatta. So moment to moment life passes by. What are you doing? Living beings' problem is they are too busy thinking, planning, worrying and reacting to life. Most of the time, so much so, they totally miss out on life. That is, they are never with the moment to fully experience and live life. Live and experience all of the wonders and beauty of life. And instead, they only existed through life. Means you don't really live. No awareness. Conscious but hardly mindful or aware. Human beings are conscious of life, isn't it? But they are never mindful. They are never aware. That's why Reverend Suwano last time used to say in Hokkien, Gong gong toa gong gong si. You see, gong means stupidity, delusion. Gong gong toa, gong gong wa, gong gong si. Means you grow out without understanding. Then you live life without understanding. You never live. Then you die also you don't understand. So that is real delusion. So you are conscious, but you never mindful. That's why you never investigate. You never find out. You never want to understand. You follow everybody. Everybody like that, you also like that. My father do that. Born, get married, give children, then die. I also born, get married, give children, die. That's how you do what people do. So learn to live life and not to worry about life. This is key. Live. Don't go and worry. Only those who are deluded, they worry about life. There are so much things to do in life, so much wonder for you to appreciate, experience, and really live. Why you go and worry about life? I don't understand. Human being has this tendency to worry about so much things. They worry about their health, because deludedly they think this is what they are. They worry about their loved one, their children, their career, their money, their wealth. So many things, their possession. Why do you do that? It's because you think you own. You think you are real. You think your loved ones are what they are, real. That's why Sakkaya Ditthi, delusion, can really bring about a lot of misery. Okay, we move on. Part 2. The Heart Sutra, Lesson 8. Brother Teo just briefly goes through it as it is only just for information and not so much for understanding. Below is Master Xuanhua's 8-line verse which Brother Teo advises us to read through before attending the next Heart Sutra class to discuss it. This one you have to read through, otherwise you cannot understand. It's quite difficult. Wonderful wisdom can reach the other shore right now. The true mind itself can merge with enlightenment source. Dhamma and analogy comprise its title, which transcends the relative. Empty of characteristic of all Dhamma is the substance beyond words. Fundamental non-attachment is its purpose and intent. And by using its power of eradication, the three obstacles are cleansed away. This is very important. Power of eradication. The three obstacles, I will explain to you afterwards. These are very meaningful. Okay, part 3 is about meditation. I will run through it quickly. While reviewing email number 3, what is meditation 2, Brother Teo came across the 6-hour meditation practice as mentioned by one of the participants. So Brother Teo has so kindly explained their 6-hour practice to us as below. The monk that introduced this 6-hour practice is quite a good monk, and his this 6-hour method or technique, which he also sometimes termed as the right effort, is quite useful and very good if you use it as a initial skillful means to train and relax the mind. But as in many instances, they thought the 6-hour is the meditation, hence the problem. And this is also the reason why every time when they are doing the 6-hour, they think they are meditating. Anyway, the 6-hour as mentioned consists of the following. It can help you, but you have to be very clear so that you won't fall into the trap as what they have done. First R is recognize. To recognize that your mind has been distracted by a distraction, which may be a pain, a wandering thought, or tension, or itchiness, or numbness within your body, manifesting as tactile consciousness or at one of the other sense of consciousness. Understand or not? Pain is tactile consciousness. Tension, tightness, itchiness, they are all tactile consciousness. But wandering thought is your thought consciousness. Then when you hear something, it's your hearing consciousness. So when you recognize that the mind has actually been distracted, preoccupied by the distraction, means no longer within the moment in silent awareness to understand what is going on, means no longer heedful. Then he said, use the second hour. The second hour is to release the mind from the distraction and let it be without clinging on or reacting to it. Means pain or whatever. You just let things be. Release that mind. Don't cling on to it. Understand? Recognize it has gone there. The distraction has pulled it away. Understand? Then when you recognize that, you just release it. Understand? And when you release it, you don't have to have anything to do it. You don't try to suppress it, control it, or do anything to suppress and remove it. Understand? Just release. Let it be. Just like what the Buddha teach. Let things be. Just return to your silent awareness. Then he add in this third step, the third hour, which is very useful. He realized the distraction come about because of a craving. Because you are not relaxed. So he said, go back and relax. The third hour is relax. To relax the tension and tightness or stress within your forehead caused by craving. Then according to him, you can check. He said your brain is like a membrane. He said this membrane will start to tighten. The moment you have a distraction, when you are clinging onto it, when there is craving, it will like start to tighten. So he said it will create tension and stress within. So you just release it. Then he said if you find a problem, you smile. That's why the fourth hour is really smile. This is to relax the body and mind of all tension and stress within. When you smile, you are relaxed. Because in order to smile genuinely, there must be a relaxed state of joy and happiness. But he just tell people to respond. He never explained all this. Then after that, he said, the fifth hour is return. To return to the cultivation of anapanasati, or mindfulness of the in and out breath. To train the mind in heedfulness or silent inner awareness. So all this is what he actually instructs. Then he said, there is the sixth hour. To repeat the above. So whenever there is a distraction, you repeat all this. So the number six step involves a lot of repeated doing by the thought. You realize or not? Hence, very mechanical or repetitive means a lot of doing, leading to thought-based meditation. If one cling on to the doing without understanding what is meditation, then what happened? So that is where the problem is. So a better way will be to replace the sixth hour with meditation via the trained mind in silent awareness instead of repeat. Because when you understand what is meditation, you only need to understand that you need to train this mind to be heedful, then use it to meditate. Understand? So the sixth hour can change to use it to meditate. This will help improve and refine upon the sixth hour to make it a lot better and much more useful. Similarly, step 5 can be stopped once the mind is already trained. Note that steps number 3 and 4 are very similar to our mind sweeping method and metta used to train and relax our mind. The one that I teach you to use, mind sweeping method and metta. Actually, is equivalent to his relax and re-smile. But the mind sweeping method is a lot better than this relax. The relax only relax your forehead, not the other part. So when you understand all this, you will know how to do it. So basically, the 6 hour can be used. Can be very useful if you can understand its purpose. Means initially use it to train your mind. Means as an initial skillful means to train and relax your mind. So this is the important sharing. Then the note. Have an open mind. When people share with us their understanding, we should appreciate. And we should have mutual respect for each other's respective understanding. No more trying to be right or arise any unnecessary argument that can lead to disharmony and misunderstanding. Avoid all division and negativity. Okay, the second note is what you all actually wanted to understand. Pure action must be performed without any evil roots or evil motive. When you want to do good or generosity to get merits, and your action is out of getting that merit or greed for that merit, it is already not a pure action, and you will end up with no true merit born of pure action that are free of all the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So always remember, don't try to be good. Don't try to do good. When you are mindful, when you are incapable of negativity, you are already good. Understand? So develop the mindfulness to see your evil roots. When you are incapable of wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong thought, you are already virtuous, automatically good. So don't try to be good, because your good is based on your views and your opinion. It can be a conditioned good. Understand? What is good to you may not be good to others. Okay, we finish this. Then we go to the sutta proper. Okay, 5 category of recondit meaning. I think we finish the verses. So now we are at page 7, the commentaries. we can start here. Yeah? Okay. Each of the first 8 lines of the verse speaks about the heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta according to the 5 categories of recondite meaning. One is explanation of the title. Huh? The first 3 lines of the verse explain the meaning of the title of the sutta in accordance with the first category of recondite meaning, the explanation of the title. Huh? So here he described to you, wonderful wisdom can reach the other shore right now. Prajna is wonderful wisdom, and paramita means reaching the other shore, or perfection. Once you have the perfection, you become enlightened, you reach the other shore. When you see the wonderful wisdom of prajna, you reach the other shore. Okay? Then the true mind itself can merge with enlightenment source. To say true mind is to speak both of the mind and of prajna. When you have the wonderful wisdom of prajna, you have the true mind. Okay? Without the wonderful prajna, wisdom, you cannot have the true mind. And so you naturally merge with the source of enlightenment. You are united with the original enlightenment of the Buddha. You join with it. You flow into it and become the substance of the original enlightenment. Merge implies uniting into a single substance. Then, Dhamma and analogy comprise the title. This is just a description which transcends the relative. The title, the heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta, is made up of the reference to both Dhamma and analogy. The phrase which transcends relative indicates the Dhamma, a Dhamma which reaches a state of non-relativity. Prajna Paramita is that Dhamma, and the heart is the analogy. These are just explanation, not important. Okay, the next one. There are 3 types of prajna. The prajna of language, the prajna of contemplative illumination. These are similar to the 3 types of wisdom under the 3 turning. The prajna of language is proclamation. The prajna of contemplative illumination is the 2nd turning, contemplative wisdom. Then the prajna of characteristics of actuality means seeing as they are, means bhavana maya panya, means wisdom according to reality. The 3rd turning. The prajna of characteristics of actuality is the ultimate wisdom. That's why the 3rd turning is the ultimate wisdom. Wonderful wisdom, and the wisdom which penetrates to the foundation. It can also be said to be the wisdom which arrive home, reach home, and the wisdom of the Buddha. What else can it be called? It is called the true heart. The true heart is wisdom. Wisdom is the true heart because prajna can be translated as the true heart. The 250 or so words of this heart sutta are the heart within the heart. The heart within the 600 chapters of the Prajna text of the great Prajna Sutta. Yet, in still another way, it is the heart within the heart. The sutta is the heart of Prajna, and since Prajna is the heart, it is the heart of heart, and therefore the text is called the Heart Sutta. Since Prajna can be translated as the heart or mind, the Great Prajna Sutta can be called the Great True Heart Sutta. It is not a false heart, not a false mind. The present sutta explains fully the wonderful principle of this actual, of its actual use. So the Dhamma in the title is Prajna Paramita, the Dhamma of reaching the other shore, the heart. Is the analogy, and it is used in the sutta to indicate that the heart, which is to say the mind, is the theme of one's entire life, and that it transcends all opposite. Okay, then we go on. Discernment of the substance, empty of characteristics of all Dhamma, is this substance beyond words. What is the sutta substance? It is empty of the characteristics of all Dhamma. A phrase which is different A phrase which is different in wording, but identical in meaning to the line in the sutta text. All dhammas are empty of characteristics. Eh? Empty of characteristic means that the substance of the sutta is without any characteristic, and the substance beyond words. Meanings that nothing can be said about it, since its substance is empty of characteristic of all dhamma. There isn't anything at all, you ask. Then what is there that is worth saying? The substance beyond words has already passed beyond the characteristic of speech, the characteristic grasped by the mind, the characteristics of written language. It has passed beyond all characteristics. It is all dhamma. Okay, we go on. Eh? These are all description only, not so important. Elucidation of its basic principle or basic purpose. Fundamental non-attachment or non-attainment is its purpose and intent. Eh? This is important. The fifth line of the verse explains the third recondite meaning, elucidation of the suttas, basic purpose, fundamental non-attainment. In one passage, the sutta says, there is no understanding and no attaining. No attainment is the sutta's purpose and intent. Now, I will make use of worldly dhamma to explain the Buddha dhamma. The word person is an ordinary noun, the designation by which human beings are distinguished from other categories. Just as a person is simply called a person, analogously, every sutta is called a sutta. Now, what is a certain person's specific name? The name by which he is identified is perhaps Smith or Brown. To discuss the specific name is what is meant by explanation of the title. What does Smith look like? Is he tall or short, black or white, fat or thin? What about his body? Is it fully formed or not? Does he have eye, ear and nose? That is what is meant by investigating the characteristics of his substance. After the substance has been revealed, then the basic purpose should be elucidated. What is meant by elucidation of the basic purpose? Smith is very learned. He can be a secretary or a PhD. That is what is meant. So, number four is discussion of the function. Continuing the analogy, what does Smith do all day? What can he do? Observation of that sort reveal the person's usefulness and capability. And by using its power of eradication, the three obstacles are cleaned away. This part you have to pay attention. This part is about karma. Huh? Eradication is what the sutta is capable of doing. So the Heart Sutta can help you actually do away with all these three types of obstruction. What can the heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta do? Its function is to clean away the three obstacles. What are the three obstacles? The retribution obstacle, the activity obstacle, and the affliction obstacle. You know what is karmic retribution, isn't it? Huh? Whatever that come back to you. Huh? You know what is karmic affliction, isn't it? Whatever suffering that afflicts you. Huh? Then there is this activity obstacle. When you are in the midst of life, there is this karmic obstruction or activity obstacle. Understand? Not? Yeah. So these are all the three things that karma can do to you. So we go through. Of retribution obstacle, the first one, the first of the three obstacles, there are two kinds. Dependent retribution and primary retribution. You read the note down there. How do you pronounce this word? In Chinese, the character guo bao, is it bao? No, the third one. Bao, is it guo bao? That Pao, He said in Chinese, the character Pao means both reward and retribution. So this is the part, primary retribution. Okay? Then dependent. Dependent, the Chinese word is, what is this word? Ti means body, is it? Okay. So there are two. One is dependent. We go through, we will know. So primary retribution is the body. Well, dependent retribution depends. So refers to what? Okay, now I understand. Okay. Oh, they are very smart. You see, when you are born of your karma, the Buddha said what? We are all born of our karma, head to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and you are what you are because of your karma. So the first one, he said, is primary retribution is the body. Yeah. So what is the body? What is your primary retribution? Body means what? Your physical body, correct or not? So when you are born, or your karma means what? Your physical body got a retribution. What is it? Your DNA. Mainly. So whether you are talented, you are stupid, or whatever, depend on your karmic retribution. So physically, you cannot argue. Maybe you say your genes, like your mother and father, because these are the parents that actually give birth to you. Understand? But actually, your DNA are all coded already. How this parent become your parent also coded already, meant to be. So this is the physical body. Okay, this is your primary retribution. The other one is called what he said there? Dependent, Dependent. So dependent means what? Your clothing and all those things there. Whether you are Bill Gates' son or you are roadside married out of whack. Dependent means your materialistic inheritance. Understand? Materialistic inheritance. Whether you are born poor or born rich. So they always said, when you are about to get married, you have to understand this point. He said, where you are born, you got no choice. Correct? Because karma decide. But who you marry to, you have a choice there. You can marry yourself into wealth or into what? But don't look at the immediate short-term advantage. If you don't know how to look at the real gem, you will make a lot of mistakes. A lot of people, they look for the immediate one. Rich man's son. What do they get? They get second wife, third wife. Most of this happen because they are wealthy. Then rich men, not all, please don't get me wrong. It's just to explain to you the chances and the tendency. So don't be discouraged if you have a very wealthy boyfriend or a soulmate. Don't worry. Karma decide finally. But most people short term, they don't see the karma. So they actually go for others. So the best example is what? Bill Gates. You remember Bill Gates? Before he became very wealthy and famous, he actually liked one girl, very pretty in the uni. But the girl don't like him because he was very square and no money. Then later he became Bill Gates. The story goes, it's even he told the kid, actually I can be his wife. He was after me. Then you know what the son said? My mother, Otherwise, I Bill Gates' son. So you see, they have this type of thinking. But do you think if he were to, she were to marry Bill Gates, the son will be the same boy? No more, isn't it? So you don't understand. But the thing that you need to understand is, if it's short term, you look at Bill Gates so square, why for? Like when my wife wants to marry me, I say, I don't know why. I don't have anything. I was renting a room. Motorbike also my brother wants. I don't have anything. I say, you're not scared, you sleep on the roadside. He said, he just saw one thing. I'm honest. She trusts me. That's it. But if you look at, must have car, must have a house, must be secure, then only you want to marry. Then you marry to the different guy. He may have all those things at that time, but after that, he may lose it all. Understand? No? So it depends, your karma. If you have the good karmic affinity, you will marry the right one. And most of the story I heard is, during my generation, when they marry, both are very simple. I should say quite poor. Not really that poor, but very simple, but don't have much, very little. But they build it up. Then they became very successful. This is the success story I heard. Those that married to rich one all got problem. End up big problem. My mother-in-law married to a rich man's son. End up a lot of problem. So these are the things. Okay, we have to go on. Otherwise, we don't have much time. Okay. So these two, you know, the first one is retribution. Means karmic retribution. There are two types. One is dependent and one is primary. So the dependent is materialistic environment. Material environment means your clothing and all those things. Your food, your clothing, your dwelling and so forth. The material environment on which the body is dependent. Therefore, primary retribution is the retribution you are undergoing right now. The dependent retribution is your environment. There are all sorts of primary retribution. Some bodies are good. You know what is good body, And some are not. Some are especially full and handsome in their appearance, so that everyone who sees them like them. Can give example, Huang Li Hong, Merely by looking upon a particular body, everyone loves and respects the person as someone who is outstanding. Perhaps a particular person really has wisdom, or another one really has got good roots. So these are all your karmic inheritance, your DNA. How you look, what other talent you have, whether your DNA is coded with all the disease or healthy cells. It all depends on your karma. Understand? So these are the things. So I will go through it quickly. Okay, with respect to good roots and wisdom, there are two types of people. First are those who have wisdom and no good roots. Got or not? Got wisdom, no good roots. Very unlikely, isn't it? What are those people like? Most of them are weird ghosts. See? He tell you they got some form of wisdom, but they don't have good roots. And monstrous demons who have come into the world as people. They are mountain essence who after a long time as old spirit and ghosts become capable of eating people. And when they die, they were able to be reborn as people possessed of a little bit of intelligence. Compared to most people, they are intelligent. So these are not real wisdom yet. But they muddle up everything they do. Their activity are not at all intelligent. They do whatever is harmful and whatever, and without exception, they lack propriety. Everything that is most harmful to people and disruptive to the order of society is what they want to do. Such people, the one who has some form of wisdom but no good roots, seems only to be afraid that the world won't be in disorder. So this is a very peculiar type of being, not the one with the good roots. The second kind, those who have good roots but no wisdom, are those who in their life exclusively perform good deeds, but did not study the sutta. You got a lot, even nowadays, Dana Queen and those things, perform a lot of good deeds, but they don't cultivate. Understand? So that's why for a lot of people, if it's time for you to cultivate, you must cultivate. Because good roots is merits, understand? Goodness, kindness. But wisdom is very important. So as a consequence, they don't have much wisdom. In fact, they are very stupid. Sometimes it's pitiful. Chief Reverend always used this. He said, good-hearted fool. You remember? Good-hearted fool. Chief Reverend always said it. Because we try to do good. Understand not? We see somebody trying to deceive us, gullibly used to say, oh, do good, must donate. Understand not? You see in the market, those people pretending one. Now you see in the internet, they go and put those things like as if it's really the wound, the decay, you know. Actually, it's fake one. You pity them. Do good. Then sometimes in the coffee shop, they come. They pretend to be like whatever. Then you pity them. You do good. That's why you must have wisdom, understanding. Do not encourage all this. Then sometimes it brings about bad repercussion. Like those kids, they kidnap. They go and chop their leg and hand. Then put them on the market, collect money. Oh, you pity them. No leg, no hand, you give money. Actually, it's all because of what you gullibly gave. Because you give them those ideas to make use of this, to prey on your, what they call, inverted comma, compassion or generosity. Actually, it's delusion. If you want to do good, there are so many places and things that you can do. Go and find out yourself. Do not be gullible, understand? When there is condition to do, you do. And you do with understanding. You really go and find out. You don't just do because people say, hey, this is good. Or you are so easily deceived by what people do. So these are the Buddha actually also under this Heart Sutta commentary, Xuanhua also got explained. That's why he wants to explain to you the various type of living beings that are born. Then Xuanhua says, some people undergo the primary retribution of being especially ugly. You must know why you are born ugly. Others have both a beautiful and full appearances and a long life full of wealth, honor and respect. Still others have a very short life. Besides being ugly, they are all kind of primary retribution, which are the fruition of causes planted in the past. So you want to have long life, good health and all those things, you must have what? You must have good roots, isn't it? What are the good roots for long life? You don't kill, you don't harm, is it? You are very kind, very loving. Then you pay respect to the worthy ones and your senior or whoever. Those who are worthy of respect means your elders. So the Buddha did mention four things grow when you do that. You pay respect to worthy ones and the elders. What are the four things? Ayu, Wana, Sukang, Palang. Ayu is long life. Wana is good complexion, beauty. Sukang is happiness. This is the most important. You must have Sukang, otherwise difficult to have good life. Then Palang is strength, very important. Both your physical and what they call spiritual strength. So if you know how to do all this you will inherit. Okay, we go on. Dependent retribution consists of one's living condition, clothes, food, and so forth. it too comes from causes in your previous life. If in previous life you planted seeds of good, the good fruition in this life will be a good reward. In a former life, you planted the seed of evil. They will reveal themselves in this life by their fruition in your retribution. Therefore, you should certainly be very cautious in everything you do. That's why the Buddha said, all evil you must avoid. Eh? If you do not plant the good seed or the causes, the good causes, eh? If you do not plant the causes of evil, then in the future you won't undergo their fruition in evil retribution. So they always have this saying, eh? Do good begets good, do evil beget evil. You reap what you sow, understand not? Then in Mahayana is better. Master Chuan Hao always say this, I remember. He said, 千万要小心, he said, you have to be very careful. 种因结果, you plant the seed of whatever condition, you will reap the fruit of it. 千万不要种错因结错果, you know the meaning or not? Always remember, never plant the wrong seed and reap the wrong fruit. Understand? Or? You want to plant something, you make sure it's something that is beneficial to you and all. Understand? Or? Like you want to plant mango, then make sure it's a mango seed. You don't go and plant something that causes you a lot of suffering and misery. Understand? You plant the evil seed of that evil retribution. Understand? Or? Like you kill, you harm, you womanize. You do all this to your spouse, so in future come you become the victim. People do back to you, understand? Or? People harm you, cheat you, rape you, snatch your thing. Because past life you plant the evil retribution of snatching people's teeth, money. So you don't blame. You don't react because these are the causes and conditions behind. So if you don't plant the evil seed, the evil retribution will not come to you. Understand? Eh? So, always be mindful of what you do, what you speak, how you act, and how you think. Because whatever you do, karmically, it comes back to you. Understand? If you speak harshly to your children, in future you have parents that speak the same way to you. Understand? If you bully your in-law, huh? Your daughter-in-law or whatever, in future you have a mother-in-law more fierce, do back to you. So you have to understand, if you are kind to people, good to people, in future you have good blessings. They will be kind and good to you. That's why you must learn to have the right speech. Eh? What are right speech? Eh? You must learn to speak appropriately, isn't it? The right speech. You must arise what they call kind, gentle, pleasant, and good speeches. What are kind speech? Kind means you are very kind towards people, isn't it? You are not being sarcastic, isn't it? That's why you are very kind, isn't it? No negativity, isn't it? Yeah. Then what are gentle speech? Yeah? You have been very gentle, isn't it? Very polite, isn't it? You say things that are very nice and very conducive, isn't it? Not something that actually that leads to what they call very, very aggressive type of speech, very harsh type of speech. Understand? Or? Your speech are very gentle, isn't it? Especially your children. You don't open your mouth and scold him already. Boy, I told you not to do. Why are you doing it? There is nothing gentle about this. It's your anger, isn't it? The evil root that conditions you to speak. But if you speak nicely to them, they can feel you. Yeah, wow, boy. Wow, today you're very good, huh? You didn't go out so late, huh? The words of praise, yeah? Being gentle and kind. Actually, they can feel you, understand? Huh? But don't let them climb over your head, because when you're too soft, also they take advantage. So you must know how to speak with sincerity. Sincerity means when you are sincere, means your speech is not selfish type, understand? Huh? Selfish means with motive, with intention. That's why you speak very simple, sincere, gentle, kind speeches. Then pleasant speeches, very pleasant, so that people like to listen to you. Good and loving speeches, means it brings about harmony, understanding. It doesn't bring about what they call division, misunderstanding, conflict, argument. So all this is how you can actually train yourself to develop the Noble Eightfold Path, so that the right speech, the right action, and the right thought will come to be, so that less and less negative retribution. Understand that? These are all the seeds you plant. The way you speak, communicate, the way you act and do things, the way you arise your thought. These are all the karmic seed you plant. So if you plant the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, your good retribution will come back to you. You will receive whatever you give. You reap what you sow. So this is a very important aspect of life. When you understand this law of karma, you will know how to live. Then you will know, when I have a lot of this goodness, the karmic retribution that come back to me will be very beautiful, because this is what I do to people. Goodness will prevail. I will receive back all this good karmic retribution, because I never harm, I never cheat, I never lie, I never commit sexual misconduct. So now you see why the five precepts are so important in that. If you keep the five precepts, you have good life. Means you never harm, never cheat, never cause misery, suffering, kill fellow living being. You never steal, misappropriate, deceive, cheat. No sexual misconduct, so much harmony. You never lie. You never speak all the wrong speech. You never partake in intoxicant that condition you into consciousness, negativity, and all those things. So these are the important understanding that you must have. Take care of karma. Karma take care of your life. Do not get angry. Do not arise the evil root. Do not be selfish. Do not have envy and jealousy. Do not be deluded. Don't go and think the wrong thought to condition your fear, worry, anxiety, misery, and unhappiness. Learn to love yourself. Anasana. Love yourself means you don't harm yourself, don't hurt yourself. No more using the thought wrongly. Use them appropriately. Okay, we go on. When you are still afflicted, why are you still afflicted right now? This is a question. Oh no, one more sentence before. I have actually skipped. Okay, we go up. Oh no. Page 11. I supposed to. Oh, I am now on page what? Page 10 only. Oh, okay. Last part. Last paragraph. Dependent retribution consists of one. Oh no, this one I finished. Oh, 11, second paragraph. Okay, maybe I start page 11. If in former life you planted the seeds of evil, they will reveal themselves in this life by their fruition in your retribution. This one we have done. Therefore, you should certainly be very cautious in everything you do. If you do not plant the causes of evil, then in the future you won't undergo the fruition in evil retribution. We finish here actually. The second of the three obstacles is the activity obstacle. This one is the second type. Not only those who have left the home life to become members of the Sangha, but also those at home should certainly have an occupational activity. While involved in a particular activity, many problems will arise, many difficult situations which will make you afflicted and unhappy. That is what is meant by activity obstacle. So this activity obstacle, you know, your livelihood, your whatever karmic obstacle, understand or not? Like you live your life now, okay? Let's say there are a lot of things that you want to do, but you cannot do, understand not? It's like something obstructing you, understand not? You want to come and learn the Buddha Dharma. Somehow, something will come up and stop you, understand not? that either divert you away or postpone you or something happened to you. You know what are the karmic retribution for this type of karma? Well, in the past, you deludedly do the same to other people. You tell people the wrong thing or you teach the wrong Dhamma. That's why you get lost. So this life come, you can never meet the Dhamma because this is the karmic fruition that you have to reap. Last time you lead people astray. Now the karmic obstruction will come, they will lead you astray. Anasana. So these are the karmic activity that will obstruct you because of your negative karmic action from the past. So all this depends on what you have done in the past. So if you have good roots, if you have bring people to the right place, study the right Dhamma, then when the time come for you, somehow you will be connected back to the right one. You will not get lost and astray. Yeah. This is what it means by activity, retribution or obstacle. Yeah. So this part is easy to understand. Huh? The third one we go to. Huh? The third obstacle is affliction obstacle. This one is your suffering. You don't blame anybody for it. Huh? You don't say, why this life my husband did that to me? Huh? Why God so unfair? Why I got cancer and all those things? Because this is affliction. You are suffering the causes that you planted from the past. Understand now? So affliction means it afflicts you now. Yeah. So the third obstacle is affliction obstacle. Everybody has affliction. Yet where do they come from? Most are generated from thought of greed, hatred, and delusion. If you don't believe, you try. Every time you have the evil roots, they are the root of all evil. The karmic retribution will come back to you. So this one will bring about affliction. Like the Buddha said, Dhammapada was one. If you act, speak, and think with a wicked mind, that condition the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, what happened? Suffering will follow you. Yeah? Like the wheel that follow the wood. This is precisely what is happening. So if you have greed, hatred, and stupidity, here they use stupidity, how can you acquire afflictions? Oh, never mind. The ELCB trip. You have to on back the ELCB. The end there. The ELCB. Just push it up. Just trip. Okay already. It's okay already. Because the lightning can trip. Okay, I just finished this one. Then we end. So this third obstacle is affliction obstacle. How can you acquire affliction? Have greed in your mind. Insatiable greed. And affliction will arise. How else can you acquire affliction? Have a temper, means anger, emotion, means the evil roots of anger, ill will. A situation isn't right for you, and so you become afflicted with anger. Again, how do you give rise to affliction? By being stupid, means deluded. You misunderstand situation and are so afflicted. Why do you become afflicted? Thoughts of contempt, thoughts of arrogance, thought of condescension, generated affliction. These are all your wrong thoughts. Furthermore, you doubt everything. And because of your doubting, you become afflicted. You see, doubt is one of the five mental hindrances too. So when you have doubt, you lack faith, you lack confidence. So all this will arise. Why are you still afflicted right now? Because you have deviant views, means wrong view, and see situation incorrectly, means without wisdom. If no matter what is happening, you have proper knowledge, proper view, and genuine wisdom, you will see very, very clearly, means there is clarity, and will understand completely. When clarity and understanding appear in the midst of circumstances, then there is no more affliction. Understand not? Yeah? It is the deviant views of greed, hatred, and stupidity, arrogance, and doubt that produce the affliction, obstacle. So you don't have evil root, you don't have affliction, obstacle. Anasana means Dhammapada was one who won't take its course. Just like the Buddha asks you, your life, you decide how you want to live. If you want to follow Dhammapada was one, then continue to be heedless, don't train your mind. Then simply act, simply speak, and simply think. That's how suffering comes to be. Then if you want to have happiness that follow you like your shadow that never leave you, train your mind, be heedful to see your mental intention. Then act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, with a pure mind, free of the evil roots. And then happiness will follow you like your shadow that never leaves you. So these are all in the teaching. Yeah? So when you understand Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, you will know how to free. Yeah? Okay, I think we stop here. Huh? We stop here. Okay. You go back and read through and finish off the rest. Huh? Because I have exceeded our time. Okay, now it's about... Oh, almost 5 o'clock. Huh? Okay. I tell you what. Today, maybe we have a short meditation. Huh? So, for those who are... For those who still want to meditate, you can continue for the seminar. You can slowly, silently come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner calmness that you have developed, inner awareness and mindfulness that you have developed. Try to maintain them for as long as you can. You need to stabilize this inner awareness, this sati. Then constantly try to be mindful throughout the day. Use this trained mind to be aware of whatever you do in life. Then when this awareness has stabilized, the Buddha call it apamada or heedfulness. When you have this constant awareness to be mindful and to understand what is going on, to develop the wisdom, the Buddha called this apamada, heedfulness. Means you have developed this heedfulness to be aware of what is going on in life, to develop the understanding or the wisdom born of this awareness. And this is how you learn, how you develop your wisdom, through understanding who you are, what you are, how your mind is being conditioned into negativity, how the evil roots come to be, how your mind come to stir and become what it is, and how you become emotional, unhappy, angry, and how does all the negative state of mind comes to be, and how through this awareness you come to understand clearly how you function as a human being. Then through this understanding, you have the wisdom to reverse all this so that your mind can always be peaceful and happy. Then when you can see very clearly with your awareness, your wisdom will grow, your understanding will grow. Then when your sati and samadhi is there, mindfulness and wisdom, stability of mind, means they call it samadhi. Yeah? When your mindfulness and samadhi is there, you can see things as they are very clearly, and there is clarity. And through that understanding, the wisdom part keep on arising. This is how you become awakened. The direct knowledge and vision of the reality, direct seeing, you are able to see things as they are. And the Buddha called this jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality of everything that you come to understand. Okay, with this, I think I will continue with where we stopped the last Sunday. We are at this page 6, email number 4, the 3 turnings and 12 modes of the 4 noble truths. I have written on the board, a summary of the three turnings. So, like I have explained earlier on, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths are very important. Even the Buddha himself to be at that time, before he became a Buddha, he said to the monk, these are the three turnings, wisdom that he need to develop. Before he has this understanding, he cannot become a Sammasambuddha. So, what more the living being and the Sangha? Even the Buddha to be with so much parami, so much perfection, he still need to understand the Four Noble Truths in his three turning to develop the three tile corresponding wisdom. The first turning is about proclamation of truth. The Buddha just proclaim what these Four Noble Truths are. Then you have the ability to understand through this hearing of truth. There is a type of wisdom he calls Suttamaya Panya. It can arise. So Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. So wisdom born of listening to the discourse of the Buddha is the first turning wisdom. That's why he called it Suttamaya Panya, proclamation of truth. So the Buddha proclaimed this truth upon hearing Kondanya awaken. That's why he has this wisdom, Suttamaya Panya. Then for those who cannot, you have to use your second turning. The Buddha said, if you reflect, contemplate and inquire into all the truth that he has proclaimed, then you can stabilize your understanding. You can assimilate what you have heard, or nowadays what you have read, or reheard from the recording. All the understanding, you assimilate them into your mind, you stabilize them. This type of wisdom he called Chintamaya Panya, means wisdom born of constant reflection, constant contemplation and inquiry into the truth. This is the wisdom my teacher Acharyantra taught me a lot. I did a lot of this contemplation on my own. I look at life, I reflect, I contemplate. But at that time I got mindfulness already. That's why I can understand very far. The moment I am silent, my mind is peaceful. There is this creative nature within. It's not muddled up. There is no thinking, nothing. It's just tranquil, still, silent. Then I just throw out this inquiry. Why did the Buddha say this? Then this inquiry will allow me to understand. Then how can I understand? Then all this will arise. Then later on, when I came out to share, it is also this contemplative ability that allow me to teach you. I just inquire, how can I let the living being understand this profound truth that the Buddha has taught? So the moment I inquire, the creative nature inside allow me to have that understanding. That's why I can share with you. That's why a lot of those things that I spoke, that I elaborated on, they are not from the textbook. They have not been taught before. So you can understand how profound this second turning is. You can use it and modify based on your understanding. It will suit you differently. Then the third turning is all about meditation, the meditative discipline. He called it wisdom born of cultivating the meditation. Bhavana. Bhavana is the meditation, meditative discipline. So Bhavana Maya Panya is the third turning wisdom. So under the third turning, the Buddha only talk about enlightenment, is it? You cultivate the meditation as taught by him. Means you train your mind to be heedful, to be mindful, ever mindful. Then you cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, the four foundation of mindfulness, the daily mindfulness. The six internal sense bases, the six external sense bases. So if you were to do all those things, he said, you will have the ability to awaken, to become wise, to become enlightened. So awakening or enlightenment that comes about through this meditative training is very powerful, very penetrative, like what Xuan Hua has mentioned just now. And he called this Bhavana Maya Panya. Okay? So now we go to the text, page 6. I will read through to you. Then, if you got any question, you can ask. The question is, yesterday I was listening to one of Bhante's talk. This is somebody who wrote to me about metta in daily life. And I cringe as he told the story of how he had root canal dental treatment without anesthetic. Reading your post about how Lord Buddha summarized up the first noble truth, saying that the Buddha summarized all of dukkha as attachment or grasping to the five aggregates of form and mind, I realized just how far away from non-attachment to the body I am, and how much closer Bhante is, and how it results in reduction of suffering, though not pain as a mere sensation, of course, even as we get closer, if not all the way yet. What an inspiration to cultivate or practice. Thank you for that. Then she requested this. It's a lady, I remember. Please could you tell me what are the three turnings and the 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths? So because of this question, I answered her. She said, with metta, with much metta to you. If I am not wrong, her name is Sue, S-U-E, from the state. I don't know her. Then I reply, I say, hi Sue, thank you for your metta and beautifully worded question. I really rejoice. Understanding of the Four Noble Truths under the three turnings and the 12 modes are extremely important for those who want to realize the enlightenment. Even the Buddha then, to be, is not exempted from it, because in his first proclamation of the Dhamma addressing the five ascetics, the Buddha said, this is the Dhammacakkappavattana, first sermon. So long as my knowledge and vision of reality regarding these four truths in their three turning or phases and 12 modes were not fully clear to me, I did not proclaim to have realized the incomparable supreme enlightenment in the world. But when my knowledge and vision of reality, make note of this word, knowledge and vision of reality regarding this Four Noble Truths were fully clear to me, you make note, fully clear to me, then I proclaim to have won the incomparable supreme enlightenment in this world. So just imagine, even the Buddha to be emphasized so strongly on this way of understanding the Four Noble Truths. So you see the importance of the three turnings. The Buddha to be also have to understand it this way. What more the living being? His perfection is so full, so complete. Then turn to next page. The Four Noble Truths are called Noble Truth or Aryan Truth because they are truths that can make you noble ones or Aryas or the enlightened ones. The noble ones are also called enlightened ones during the time of the Buddha because they are very noble in every aspect of their life, very noble in their understanding, very noble in their speech, action, the way they arise their thought and the way they live their life. That's why they have these noble qualities. They are called noble ones. So this part is very important. Hence the reason why the Buddha called them noble truth and not just universal truth. So now you must understand why he called it noble truth, not universal truth. Because this group of Buddhists were arguing. They are trying to justify why it's called noble truth. They cannot understand. Then some say it's better to call it universal truth or supreme truth, all these words. Then I explain, I say, there's a reason, because noble truths are truths that can make you noble one, enlightened one. That's why it's different. Then I say, in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or the first sermon of the Buddha, the Buddha turned the Four Noble Truths three times. Since there are four truths, so 4 times 3 is equals to 12, hence the 12 mode. In the first turning, the Buddha just proclaimed the Four Noble Truths in their numerical order. So this first turning is always on the proclamation of truth by the Buddha. For example, the first Noble Truth, the Buddha proclaimed. Now you listen. If you can become enlightened, you have the first turning. Suttamayapanya. The Buddha said, now this old bhikkhu is the Aryan truth or noble truth of dukkha. Birth, old age, sickness and death are dukkha. To be with people whom you don't like is dukkha. To be separated from your loved ones or prized possession is dukkha. Not able to get what you want or what one desires is also dukkha. It's the same as when things don't go your way, you are unhappy. And in short, it is these 5 aggregates of form and mind, which are the aggregates of grasping that I call dukkha, followed by the proclamation of the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Noble Truth. You want to read the proclamation, it's at the back, the appendix. The appendix, they have all the proclamation there. So I explain. Through hearing of this noble truth as proclaimed by the Buddha, a type of wisdom called Suttamayapanya, or wisdom born of hearing the sutta or the discourse of the Buddha, can arise. Just like the case of Venerable Kondanya, one of the 5 ascetic, who became enlightened, a Sotapan, upon hearing the first sermon of the Buddha. Likewise, the Venerable Sariputta, he just inquired from Venerable Asaji, also one of the 5 ascetic, as to what his teacher has taught him. Venerable Asaji just mentioned 2 very simple verses or truth as taught by the Buddha. And Venerable Sariputta also became a Sotapan. So it's so easy during the time of the Buddha. So this proclamation of truth, of the Noble Truth, under the first turning can be very powerful. And for certain people who has a special karmic path, like those of Kondanya and Sariputta, enlightenment in the here and the now via just hearing this noble truth is possible. So it depends. If you have your path, you can also have this. Then the second turning is very unique and important, because under the second turning of the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha put forth 4 different emphases on all of the Four Noble Truths. Each and every truth, he emphasized it differently under the second turning. So the Buddha, under the second turning of the first Noble Truth, he said to the monk, the Buddha said, this Noble Truth of dukkha is to be understood. So this is the second turning. What do you get from this? How do you reflect? How do you contemplate? Let's say you hear this. The Buddha said, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. How can you develop the second turning wisdom based on what you have heard? He already hinted to you, you have to reflect, contemplate and inquire. How do you do it? How do you do it? You have to try. If you don't try, you cannot understand. What is your first inquiry? What is it? Use the mic. Pass the mic to her. Press. Push up. Then
that
after
is, that is, we have to understand the cause, the rising of the...
No, that is the second noble truth. That is the second noble truth. This is the first noble truth of suffering, dukkha. He said, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. That is the second turning proclamation.
And everything is suffering.
No. How do you make use of what the Buddha said to arise the wisdom of the second turning? You see, he has told you, under the first noble truth, the second turning, this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. You listen to this. How do you reflect? How do you contemplate? How do you inquire? How do you get the wisdom? The question. What did the Buddha say? This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. So what must you inquire? No, that's why don't become rigid. You just want to tell me what your Dhamma has in your head. Assume you don't know anything. You ask yourself, why did the Buddha say this? Understand? The first inquiry, why did the Buddha say this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood? Correct or not? This is the first question you should ask. Because you don't have to believe the Buddha, is it? The Buddha said this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood. So your first inquiry is, why did he say that? Then only you can understand him, is it? Okay, now I ask you. We inquire. Why did the Buddha say this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood? Why? If you don't understand, how do you know you suffer? Correct or not? That's why the inquiry straight away, you will wake up. Well, no wonder the Buddha is so wise. If I don't know what dukkha is, how can I understand what is dukkha? How do I know when I suffer? Understand now? That's why just now Ng Bee was trying to arrive at the solution, but didn't inquire yet. You must inquire. Why did the Buddha say this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood? Means I must understand what he says, then only come to the eight condition. What did the Buddha say under the first noble truth? Then you go through it again. You reflect and you contemplate each and every word. Then you ask, why did the Buddha say birth, old age, sickness and death is suffering? Then only you can understand. And this is how you must contemplate. Understand now? If this one also you cannot do, means everything you want spoon-feed. What must I do? You don't want to find out. You don't want to investigate. You don't even want to know. Understand not? The Buddha already make it so clear for you. He already hinted to you. This noble truth of suffering is to be understood. Means, how can you understand this noble truth? You must read through what he has proclaimed, isn't it? And understand every word he said, isn't it? Then only you know what suffering is, isn't it? Then only you know when you suffer, isn't it? That's why I said like meditation. Don't even want to find out what is meditation. Teach me how to meditate. You can never understand. What is suffering also you don't know. You want to move on to the cause of suffering. Understand? You cannot understand because you have to go step by step. So, first inquiry is what? Why did the Buddha say this? Is that? What is the answer? Why did the Buddha say this? Why did he say this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood? After you have understood, what happened? Means you know what suffering is, isn't it? And what is dukkha under the first noble truth? So that you can reflect and contemplate on every word that he said or spoke or proclaimed, isn't it? Then you start to inquire, reflect, contemplate. Why did he say birth, old age, sickness and death is suffering? Why? Take birth for example. Is there suffering when there is birth? Of course, ladies will know. But the man may not know. The man only think of what? Full moon, new moon. Oh, it's a happy occasion. It's a joy. I am going to have my first child. Looking forward with so much joy. But you never understand what that first noble truth is. So the Buddha's meaning is, there is a noble truth that talks about suffering. There are eight conditions in this world, which are the realities of life and existence, the Buddha said. If you live long enough, you have to confront them all the eight conditions. You cannot run, is it? And if you don't have the wisdom, suffering will come to be. That's why it's a noble truth that talks about the possibility of suffering. He never said life is suffering, understand not? There is a noble truth that talk about suffering. If you don't have wisdom, then it is very real, very true. So when you understand this, you start to inquire, why did the Buddha say birth is suffering? Then as a lady, you will know, when you conceive your child, the first 10 months, is there suffering? There are so much suffering in it, especially the first 1 month. After that, you have your morning sickness, your vomiting and all those things. Then a lot of things happen to your body, the hormone changes. Then your body size change, understand or not? Then your movement are no longer like before. Then you have to be very careful because now there is 2 persons inside, no more one. Then whatever this one fetus do, you come to experience them. That's why sometimes later month, 6, 7, 8, or 8 months, 9 months, it start to kick you, understand? Then you start to experience the what they call the muck. It like swollen. I saw my wife show me. When they kick, like swell out. But not painful. It's just some they have to endure the very active baby. Very active. And I really saw from the stomach there, the skin come out. Sometimes 1.5 inch or 1/2 inch high. It depends on how strong they kick. Then it go down. Very interesting. But these are all you have to observe. Then upon birth, what happened? The first thing, there is this birth. Very painful type of what they call, you have to push the baby up. Then now they got medical science to help you. They put you under anesthesia. They do an open cut, cesarean or whatever. Or they do an incision. But still, you have to push. They prefer a natural birth. So they ask you to push. And it's very, very painful and very, very stressful. Understand? You have to use a lot of your strength. Then by the time you are through, you are so tired and so exhausted. That's why there is a lot of suffering that comes with the birth process. Then what happened? The first instant is the baby cry. Why did he cry? You say suffering, Actually, it's not suffering. They need air, the sound. That's why the tendency is to cry. But you are right, because wherever there is birth, there is old age, sickness, and death. Understand? It follows. So that's why suffering will come to be if you don't have the wisdom. So the first 4 conditions is very easy to understand, because it comes with the what they call reality of life. And if I live long enough, I will experience birth. I will experience what they call old age, disease, and death. So all this, when it arises, I need to inquire and ask myself, I am not the only one subject to it, understand? Every living being that live long enough has to confront this. If you are not ready with the wisdom and the understanding, then the Buddha said, suffering will arise. You will be afflicted. So that's why you tell yourself, this noble truth is so important, so beautiful. The moment I understand, I need not suffer. That's why the Buddha said, this noble truth of suffering is to be understood. The moment I understand, I don't have to suffer. So that's why I need to understand. That's why I determine to understand. That's why it will drive me to cultivate, to reflect, to contemplate. Then you know old age. As you grow older, you know what happened to you or not. Your body starts to give you problems. Disease, sickness start to come because it comes with old age. Understand? Then your organ and your senses start to deteriorate. You are not able to do the thing that you used to do. And it gives you so much problem, like your vision less clear, you need spectacle and all that. Then your hearing is all affected. Then all your senses, your leg, your movement, your rheumatism and all those things, they start to come and afflict you. So all this is part and parcel of the decay process, the aging process. Then the most frightening one is what? Dementia. You heard of this? Dementia? Or what they call... What? Not mentally retarded. There is another name they call what? 痴呆症啊。Alzheimer. So this is what they call the memory cells weakened. Then they cannot remember new thing because the memory cell cannot play that role. Old thing they can remember, so new thing they cannot. Then sometimes they have problem. They can really walk out of the house naked, not wearing anything, because they forgot. There is no memory. Then sometimes they get lost somewhere. They see those place, new place. They cannot remember. But the old place, they can remember. But now, development is so fast. So, a lot of things they see are new. Their memory cannot recognize anymore. So, that's why they can get lost. So, you don't have to react to what happened. Because there are reasons why they are like that. So, when you understand them, you will have this what they call love and compassion to actually develop the understanding and care for them, because they are your parents before, understand or not? So now they have this, karmically maybe they have the retribution, but this is filial piety. If you love them, you have the gratitude and respect towards them, and you understand how they have sacrificed so much to care for you, give you life and bring you all the education, the protection, the care, and the sacrifice, then out of all this love and compassion and understanding, you should actually love them and care for them. Yeah. Then you understand the law of karma. You reap what you sow. If you neglect them, later on your children will neglect you. Understand now? If you love them, serve them, it will be your inheritance. You will inherit all this. You will have very good children who will look after you, protect you. Then even if you are born as an animal, you have good life because you have such great parami. That's why you saw all those cat and dog, very well dressed like aristocrat. Why? Because they care for people. Last time they are pet, they dress them up so nicely. So this life they come, even as animal, they are being taken care of because this is what you care. The love you express to animals or anything, these are your inheritance. That's why when you do evil, evil will come back to you. So this is something that you must understand. So after that you continue. There are some more. When you are with people whom you don't like, when you have separation from your loved ones and your prized possession, when you cannot get what you want, you have to reflect and contemplate. How does it become dukkha, suffering? So that when you clearly understand them, then you have the real wisdom. Otherwise, the wisdom cannot come. That's why I say, when you get sick, you get old, don't complain. Tell yourself, it's a blessing in disguise. This is what the Buddha wanted me to understand, understand not? This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. Now I am in the midst of it, that's why I can understand. I can understand what suffering is. So if you actually have the wisdom, you can turn it around. It becomes a blessing in disguise. Understand now? Because you are able to reflect and contemplate on this noble truth. Then you won't go and complain and develop the fear, worry, anxiety. You die already. Doctor say I got cancer. Why you want to do that? You instead turn it around and perceive it with wholesomeness. You say, oh, that's not bad. I've been waiting for this for very long because only with this I can really, really face this. Understand now? This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. Suffering is to be understood. Understand now? So sickness is like that. That's why when I get sick, I am very happy. But not terminal thing yet. So far it's only... You know, when you get sick sometimes, you got this, what they call, I don't know whether you have or not. Sometimes this type of, you got no appetite for food. Understand? Then you got this type of funny feeling inside. You don't feel good. Understand? Yeah, like the body is like reacting to a lot of things. Then sometimes you got constipation. you cannot pass out what is inside and it's uncomfortable. Understand? You can experience them all. So when I experience them all, I feel good. I say, oh, this is really suffering because the system is not working already. Then that time I have a lot of what they call gratitude towards the Buddha. Then I have a lot of this what they call understanding. I always tell myself, I say, next time when I am normal, when I don't have any sickness or what, I am going to have a lot of gratitude. I am going to have a lot of contentment. Understand? Means whenever I am at peace, without disease and sickness, I feel so good. Do you know that? I really try to experience what I can in life. Because it is a blessing to be free of sickness. Understand? Free of this old age thing. Because these are the reality of life and existence. When it comes, it can really make your consciousness different. Although I don't have delusion, I cannot become miserable anymore, understand? But you can feel, this is not a state that you like, understand? Especially last time before I operate my abscess at my buttock there, they call this, it's not pus, it's abscess. They got the pus, nana one, very painful one, really painful one, but I can endure. Then when the doctor did the incision and drain, I can see, that thing, because of that part is dirty. So when I was young, we don't have this, what they call, proper sanitary. My parents, they were not that wealthy. You know, ours is bucket system. You know, a bucket system, at night people come and change your bucket. Then sometimes there is a wind that blows down there. Then when you drop your dropping, sometimes there is water down there, then your buttock is all affected. Then we don't have proper, what they call, toilet paper. I used newspaper last time. I don't know. I don't understand. Then I never wash it. That's why it developed into all this chronic thing. Then later on when I grew up, then only I start to understand. Then when I see the doctor and get it operated in 1996, then only the doctor tell me, you must clean that part. Oh, then from that day onward, until today, every day I wash with soap. You better do that, otherwise you get problem. You must wash with the soap. When you take your bath, when you do your business, clean that part. Because that part is very easy to get infected. The doctor say there's a lot of what they call the nerve center. Don't know nadis or don't know what is it. It's all there, is it? And that area is very dirty. So once that thing actually attack, then you have a lot of this thing. Mine, he say, was a fistula. You know what is a fistula? He say U shape already, connect from one end to the other end. So he said, I got 3 fistula, very difficult to deal. But he was very good. He said he managed to clean them all up, all the 3. And it was very surprised. Because that time, when I was about to fly off to LA, my whole family supposed to go with me, family. 1 week before I fly, I went and see the doctor because that thing starts to develop. Then I say, better check with the doctor before I go, although I can endure. The doctor told me, he said, you either do it immediately or you go there and you make sure you have the money. He said, if you have this in US, it's going to cost you a lot. I say, if I were to do it here, how long it take? He said, the operation is very fast. He said, you stay one night, the next morning I do, then 2 days later you go back. Then I say, how long it take to heal? He said, depend. Then I tell him, I am flying off to LA 1 week later. Then he look at me. He said, it depend. He said, you better do, you don't do worse. I say, I'm not worried about after I do. After I do, I can endure, no problem. I said, but you make sure what you tell me is correct. Within so many days, I come out. Then I can fly, I say. He said, yeah, but you may have to bring a, he said, sit on a ring so that I don't go and like bruise that place, injure that place. I said, I don't need all those. So I went for the operation, and I was so surprised. He did such a good job. I stayed that night. The next morning, I have the operation. The following day, I'm okay already. I already knew I am fully recovered. Then I was discharged the subsequent day. Then I flew to LA. 21 hours, mind you, in the plane. It was an economy class. And I tell you, luckily I know how to meditate. It was such a beautiful trip. I tell you, immediately after operation, you sit for 24 hours on the plane, cannot move without the ring and all those things, and nobody to clean it for you and wash it for you. Not easy. But for me, it's easy because I can endure. And when I relax, I silence my mind, I meditate, nothing happened. Then by the time I reach, I was okay. Then until today, 96, 16 years already. Very good. That's why you need to see a doctor. You better see a doctor. Oh, another 5 minutes. I better go a bit faster. Okay, so now you know how to reflect and contemplate. This is the first noble truth only. Then when you go to the second noble truth, the Buddha say, this cause of arising of dukkha, which is craving, isn't it? Is to be abandoned. You need to inquire the same. Understand or not? Why did the Buddha say, I have to abandon this craving? Because craving is the cause of suffering, isn't it? So how can I do it? That's why you're inquiring. First is, why did the Buddha say this? Then when you understand already that this is the cause of arising or suffering, that's why I have to abandon it, then only I can free. Understand or not? Then you ask, how can I do it? The inquiry, how can I do it, is very important. And then you will go and investigate and find out. Not go and ask the question, Brethil, what must I do? Like that, you never learn, understand or not? Because you every time ask for instruction, like meditation. Can you teach me how to meditate? Means you don't want to find out what is meditation. You don't even want to find out and understand what it is. You just say, teach me how to meditate. Understand? Teach me how to abandon it. Where got such thing? You go and find out yourself. Understand? Understand and find out. That's why the Buddha wants you to reflect, contemplate, and inquire. Investigate into it. Everything also spoon-fed. That's why you cannot learn. You cannot understand. In life also same. Don't be gullible. Don't everything also... like that do correct? I follow you. You should die when I tell you. Because you do without understanding. Understand? Your friend make mistake, you also make mistake. Because you like to follow. The world like to follow. Do you understand? Because they have this herd instinct. Everybody laugh, they also laugh. Everybody like clap, they also clap. Because they don't want to be different, understand? Otherwise, they feel that they are the odd one out. They never really wants to find out. And I'm always the opposite. I like to be the odd one out. I like to do opposite thing. But I don't purposely do it. I realize everything I do is opposite of what the human being do. When they laugh, to me, it may not be something that is laughable. That I don't laugh, because I understand. But when, of course, something that is quite humorous, I still laugh, understand or not? But the way I laugh is different. I laugh with understanding. Understand? I laugh not to get carried away. I laugh because it is quite humorous, and it's actually something that you can really understand, and there is meaning to it. That's why there is a lot of joy, understand or not? So it depends on your understanding. When you have understanding, the things you do are very different. Okay? So the reflection and the inquiry. The third noble truth, the Buddha said, this cessation of dukkha is to be realized. See, the emphasis is different. First noble truth, the noble truth of suffering is to be understood. Okay? You understand now. Then after that, the cause arising of dukkha, craving, is to be abandoned. Then, the cessation of dukkha, which is the enlightenment, is to be realized. You have to realize it, understand or not? Otherwise, no meaning. I know what enlightenment is, but I cannot realize what for, understand or not? That if you have enlightenment, you want to abandon it. You don't want it. You want to realize it. That's why this cessation of dukkha or nibbana is to be realized. The last one is the best. This Noble Eightfold Path, which will lead to the cessation of all suffering, is to be what? Read. Aha! Why did the Buddha say cultivated? Means not like the first noble truth, understand not? Understanding it is not enough. You go and rattle, oh, right view, right speech, right action, right thought, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. What for? The Buddha say, cultivate it. Make sure you can speak with the right speech. You talk only. Understand not? That's why understanding is not enough. When it comes to Noble Eightfold Path, you must cultivate it. This Noble Truth, Noble Eightfold Path, is to be cultivated. That's why you must cultivate it so that it becomes a part of you. So that your nature reflects that Noble Eightfold Path. Without Noble Eightfold Path, you cannot become enlightened. You cannot be free. You will have suffering. So these are the second turning which are very important. Then we run through quickly and you go back and read. I will go through this particular email more slowly so that you understand. You see, you go back and read and develop your understanding so that you can ask me more questions. So this one is very important. Next page. So under this second turning, we need to inquire, why did the Buddha say all this? See? That's why purposely I don't want to let you know this page. And I know you never read. If you have read, you would have answered me just now. Why did the Buddha say all this? Why did he say this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood? And how can we develop the understanding? And to do that, we need heedfulness or apamada, to constantly reflect and contemplate on this noble truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. Through this constant inquiry and contemplation and reflection on truth, a second type of wisdom called Chintamaya Panya can arise. That is, after hearing the truth, we need to slowly develop the clearer and more refined type of understanding via this constant contemplation and reflection on those truths. Only then we can stabilize our understanding to develop the Chintamaya Panya. So now you understand, huh? That's why after you reflect and contemplate and discuss, your understanding starts to stabilize. And this is a very important topic. You should encourage and stimulate yourself with among your Dhamma friends. Discuss this topic. What is your understanding? Why did the Buddha say this? So that your idea can be shared, understand? So that this understanding can open you up. So that you can develop the wisdom. Then I make a note also. Please note that when it comes to the second turning or the fourth noble truth, the emphasis is on cultivation. Just now I told you already, of the Noble Eightfold Path. Instead of just understanding it only as with the case of the second turning or the first noble truth. So, suffering, the first noble truth, understanding it is enough. But when it comes to Noble Eightfold Path, you must cultivate it. Understand not? So, similarly, the emphasis for the second turning of the second noble truth is on abandoning of the cause of arising of suffering. And that of the second turning of the third noble truth is on the cessation of dukkha is to be realized. So, these are all very important. Go back. Reflect, contemplate, understand, then next week we can discuss it more. Then you go through the third turning yourself. Then we can actually have a more fruitful type of Dhamma discussion. Okay, any question? Do you have any question? If you don't have, then we can end. We will do the usual sharing of merits, transfer of merits, then invoke the blessing for the country. Then after that, we can actually end. Okay, sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata ca bhumata devanaga mahindika ปุญญังตังอนุโมทิตวาจิรังรักขันตุโลกัสสาสนะ May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation.Itta vata jamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer our merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu.สุขิตาหอนตุญาตโยอิดังเมญาตินังโหตุสุขิตาหอนตุญาตโยอิดังเมญาตินังโหตุสุขิตาหอนตุญาตโย Let this merits accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all do be well and happy. Okay, the third one is to invokeThe blessing for our nation. Devo asatukalena sasa sampatihi tuca fito bhavatu loko ca raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest. May the world prosper and have peace. May the government of the day and the king of the day be righteous.Okay, the next one is your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of these merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until nibbana is realized.Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones.